Namaskar and welcome to Radio Eka. My name is Shruti Deora.
And my name is Priyanka.
And we are your hosts for the Radio Eka podcast.
Eka is a place to learn Yoga Nidra, Pranayama and meditations from India. We have a mobile app and we also offer daily meditation classes on Zoom. If you want to try the app or join our classes, please check out our website www.ekameditation.com or just check the show notes.
So today I'm super excited. We embark on a journey to understand yoga therapy. And to kick us off on this journey, we have Garima Kapila from Mumbai to start off with an overview and to share her practical experiences. Garima founded and heads the Swasth Yoga Institute. She has been a part of the core leadership team for Teach for India from its startup years and a management consultant at McKinsey & Company. She graduated from IIT Delhi in 2005 with a BTech in Computer Science and Engineering. She has completed Masters of Science in Yoga, Postgraduate Diploma in Yoga Therapy, is a professional certified life coach, integral somatic experiencing practitioner, and a lone scholar at the Harvard School of Public Health. Wow. Welcome, Garima. We are really fortunate to have you join us today.
Thank you so much, Shruti. It's a pleasure and a privilege.
Wonderful. So please share with our listeners your fascinating life journey from being a consultant at McKinsey to co-founding Swasth and now heading the Swasth Yoga Institute.
I think life, for me, I've learned a lot from many, many teachers, many courses, many of these degrees that you mentioned. But for me, life has been my biggest teacher. And this journey from McKinsey to what I'm doing now, as I think about it, has many, many layers to it. I've learned a lot in the process around relationships, around my life purpose, how I approach work and leisure and just different aspects. So I'm going to focus, because this itself could be a whole episode, I'm going to focus very narrowly on my journey with respect to my own health, my physical health and my mental health, and how that led to me doing the work that I do. Mm-hmm. So this is broadly in three chapters, you can say, that journey, which have been three turning points. The first turning point was in 2007, around 15 years ago, when I was a first-year management consultant. It was a dream job. Everything that I could have asked for, a lot of opportunity to learn, to grow. And just it was just, you know, the ideal job that checked every single sort of box out there.
Absolutely. And it's the most coveted job out of IIT.
Exactly. And so it was, since that, it was the job. But a year into it, I actually found myself in a situation where I had unexplained back pain. And this back pain started with my lower back, soon started radiating to my limbs, so my arms, my legs. Nothing that I did was helping. So sitting, standing, lying down, nothing worked. I went in for every sort of possible therapy I could have imagined at that time. Started with allopathy, got a lot of tests done. I was 23 years old, so they couldn't explain why something like that would happen at this age, right? And there was no structural defect. And I went in for the Ayurvedic massages, tried yoga also, hypnotherapy, acupuncture, you name it. I tried everything and it would just give temporary relief. I couldn't understand what was happening and why. And it was then that I actually got to know about this yoga university of Bangalore called S. Vyasa, Swami Vivekananda Yoga Anusandhan. And when I went there, I was admitted as a patient, which again was something hard for me to digest at that young age. But that's where I actually understood what yoga is really about. So yoga today has become about physical postures, which I was also doing. And it was giving me some amount of relief, but not all. And there I understood that yoga, the actual word yoga, is around harmonizing itself. Yoga means to be in harmony with ourselves. And that the root cause of most health issues today is our mind. And as I reflected on what was happening within me, my inner landscape, I was just not aware of up until then. But when I reflected on what is it that was not aligned within me, I realized that the work that I was doing, even though it checked all the boxes, would not fully align with who I was and how I wanted to manifest my skills, my talents, and my heart, most importantly, into the world. So sitting over there one day, almost like, you know, epiphany, sitting under a tree, sort of thing, reading Swami Vivekananda.
Yeah, the apple dropped.
And I realized I had actually been had extremely happy moments as a consultant. And those moments had been when I'd been working in the social sector. And that gave me sort of something, a voice within me just said that that's the step I need to take. I need to work in the social sector because that's when I've been the happiest. And so from there, I made a call. I connected with our partners and I said, this is a decision I've taken. I had no backup plans, nothing. But since that time I took the decision, my back pain just completely disappeared. And it's been so many years since, right? I've done everything, trekking, hiking, swimming, cycling, and it's not come back. And that really opened my eyes to help me understand it at a, such a surface level. There's just so many layers and layers of this. So that, I think, was the first chapter in my life story. The second was actually when I did end up working in the social sector. It turned out I could actually continue at McKinsey and work in the social sector. I did also move on after some time to Teach for India. And again, that seemed like the best opportunity. I loved the work environment, the culture, ticking all the boxes. But again, after 3 years, I found myself in a place where now not my body, but my mind was speaking to me. And my mind was, I was just not happy. And I didn't understand why that was happening. I took some time off again to reflect within. And that's when I realized that while I had been tending to my outer work, I had not been doing my inner work so much. And I realized that it's not just important around what you do, but how you do is also important in our inner journey. So over the next 6 years, I did a lot of work to understand and work on the spiritual aspects of my well-being, physical, mental, emotional, social, all of that. Did this for myself. And slowly what was interesting was I had no intention to work on my physical health because it seemed fine. Nothing was broken anymore. But in this process, I actually started automatically reversing a whole sort of health issues. So I had early signs of PCOD. My periods were extremely painful. And I just didn't get to know when that all got reversed. I shed 10 kgs, which I had put on without attempting or doing anything about it. Yeah, I mean, it actually again showed, right, that we set goals, but if you follow the right approach without the goal, the body will come into its natural state of being.
This is very interesting, actually, especially, we, you know, we live in a world which is so focused on treating the symptom rather than the root cause. And I think, I feel like it's rare for people to be so attuned to into their you know, what their inner self is telling them. So kudos to you to be, you know, tuned into yourself, your inner self, which is, I feel, in a world which is dominated by, you know, targets and ambition and all outwardly stuff. So kudos to you to be attuned inner towards your inner self. So that's great. And that's a very, very inspiring story. That's great. So,
and that actually is our motto also. So it's interesting you talked about this, being tuned into inner self. So at Swasthya Yoga Institute, our motto is free to be me. So when I allow myself to do that free of all the conditioning, that's when health is a natural outcome. It is that state of being.
Excellent. Excellent. Great. So let's move on to our topic for today. So yoga therapy, right? So experts define yoga therapy in many ways, which seems, I mean, the definition that I usually like is ensuring improved health and well-being through the application of teachings and practices of yoga. So what does yoga therapy mean to you? And what are the basic principles behind your approach to yoga therapy at Swasthya Yoga Institute?
So I think the main goal of yoga therapy for us is sustained well-being. When I say well-being, it's referring to all aspects from physical, mental, social, spiritual, and beyond that, a universal aspect. So all dimensions of well-being. And to do it in a manner that is sustainable and that is sustained. So simple things like it's been proven that 83% of the diets actually fail in the long term. People end up gaining back the weight or even more than what they had originally lost. Mm-hmm. So sustainability is also something that is very, very important for us. And that is a main aim of the way we're administering and designing the therapy also. The approach that we're taking towards it is to actually harmonize the East and the West. So to take the core principles, the original intention of the yogic sciences, and to look at them in a manner that is something that we can speak in our current language and modify it as per need to the present context as well. Right? Like our, and for example, our great grandparents would have had 5 chapatis a day, but and topped with ghee. But the ghee that you get today is different. The physical level of activity is different. So again, the modification as per the context is a very important one for us. And that's where we continuously keep grounding ourselves just in the key principles and say the principle is going to create a tool which may be different based on the context of the individual as well. So our approach to yoga therapy is a 3-pronged approach. We have 3 steps or a circular framework. The first step we say is testing. The second step is to get therapeutic support. And the third step is to do self-heal. So it's a very simple framework. All of us, without knowing it, applied. So at the time of COVID, right, people were testing their SpO2 levels or seeing how much difficulty are they having in breathing, the temperature. So you test. Based on the test gives you an idea of how much and what kind of therapy do you need. Do you need allopathy, Ayurveda, any kind of pathy, naturopathy, but some external treatment that a specialist can come in and provide. And that's the second part. And the third step, which is where we focus a lot, is to do self-healing. Saying that sometimes people just stop at therapy. And that may solve the problem in the short term, but it's not sustainable. So self-healing is what our work is largely focused on, and saying, how can we ignite the self-healing capacities of the body? It knows what is to be done. We just need to tune in, not come in the way, not be a barrier to the self-healing mechanisms. So that's a broad approach.
So, but let me just go back to the second step. So do you bring in all these experts then, whether it's allopathy or naturopathy or Ayurveda, or does the person go outside for that?
We currently don't, because most people do have access. Right. Wherever they need a referral, we have like a pool of people, practitioners who have been recommended, and we make that referral. The challenge is there is enough supply and there is enough,
Understand.
On the self-healing part, the key principles that we're working with is to make sure it's holistic, and the second is to make sure it's empowering. So when I say holistic, it's again addressing not just all aspects of the well-being, but the way towards that. When you say be in touch with myself, what is myself? It is my body, my vital energy, my mind, and my emotions, which is BEME. So when I said free to be me is our motto, the be me is actually standing for the 4 things that we need to be connected to and need to work on, address all of them. The empowering part is also very important. So if you see the current health and healthcare system, the way it's structured is that there is primary care, which is you go to a doctor or a yoga instructor, then there's secondary care, you go to a specialist, there's tertiary, there's hospitals, all of that. Right? We're creating a system where largely we end up going to specialists, and that's what we're seeking. But the idea of yoga was never to do that. The idea of yoga was to make you the owner of your health. So what we work on is to say, how can home be the first point of care? Beneath the pyramid, can we add this layer? Because if we're taking care of ourselves at home through our daily lifestyle, we don't need to, actually go to a primary or a secondary or a tertiary. And it'll significantly shift the way the healthcare system and the wellness system is structured. So the empowering part is very important, and we don't want anyone to depend on us. So if someone has been working with us for 1 year, 2 years, it means that we have failed at some level. We would not want a participant to depend on us, and we want to make ourselves redundant.
That's excellent. So you're trying to work with what in modern terminology on the preventive side of things, and trying to reduce the curative burden of the medical system, basically.
That, and also on the curative side, to recognize that today's curative work actually has limitations. Mm. So if you look at diabetes, hypertension, all of that, we are not modern science, or let me call it conventional science. It's conventional. It has not cured diabetes.
Absolutely.
In fact, most physicians will say, once a diabetic, always a diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
All that it's doing is that it's reducing the symptom. It's cutting off the symptom. So if you have a tree or a plant that actually has a disease, you're just cutting the leaves and believing that the problem has been solved. Whereas the roots and the soil is completely infected, it's going to lead to more diseases coming up. Mm. And we see that, right? You don't take your hypertension pills for one day, the blood pressure comes running back. So we are far from a cure. Modern conventional science, rather, let me again rephrase that. Conventional science has helped us make headway for infectious diseases. But today, 70% of the deaths, not just in India, but globally, it is now known, are caused due to non-communicable diseases. These are lifestyle diseases we have caused. Conventional science does not have a cure for them. And that's where yoga therapy is not just for preventive, but if someone has a health issue, how do you first prevent it from becoming bigger than what it already is?
Hmm.
How do you manage it? And eventually, how do you reverse it? How do you get off your medicines?
Excellent. I think we need more of yoga therapy, let's just say, because I can see it in my family also. Like my dad is taking probably hypertension pills, and my uncle and auntie are taking, diabetic medications. So it is definitely, and our previous generation was more active. I feel like our generation sitting in front of the computer all day is definitely going to see even worse, outcomes in terms of our health.
Absolutely. And that's beginning to happen in the developed world. Now they say that in the West, in the US, for example, this is the first generation that is going to live lesser and shorter than its parents.
Oh, wow.
The benefits of Western science, conventional science, have plateaued. Now the decline is starting.
Wow. Wow. Okay, got it. Okay, let's move on to, what does yoga say? What's the yoga philosophy behind well-being of an individual? And what does the yogic science tell us about it?
So I'll go back to the key principles, which is the foundational blocks of yoga therapy. The first aspect, which is what is the goal? Finally, the goal of this is sustained well-being, to be swasth in Sanskrit. So Sanskrit, the word for health is swasth. And so today we are looking at health as physical, mental, emotional, social, spiritual, but yoga and the yogic science actually goes a step beyond that.
Mm.
So if you see the etymology of the word swasth, the etymology, and in Sanskrit, the etymology is the most important. It actually reveals everything. To give an example, earth is called jagat. Ja is what? Gat is what moves. So they knew that the earth rotates, revolves, and that's how it was sort of created. Or bhugol, we talk of geography. So the fact that the earth is round was embedded and known way before people discovered it. So likewise, for swasth, the meaning is to be sthit in your swa. Swasth is two words, swa and stha.
Mm-hmm.
Swa is myself, which is what you were referring to, right? How do you get in touch with yourself? And stha, it's the same root that you will find in the other words like sthan, sthir, sthit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or even in English words like stable, right? Or to be established. So the idea is, how can you get established in yourself? And when you are established in yourself, health is an outcome. It's not going to be a goal to work towards. It's going to happen. Because the body is constantly figuring out, how can I get to a state of well-being? We call it homeostasis. It's already got all these mechanisms within. You're talking of blood pressure, right, in your family. And the body has baroreceptors. Internally, we have an internal BP measuring machine, which is constantly monitoring the BP and saying, what do I need to adjust? So the way to do that is to be established in ourself. What is myself? This is what, again, the sciences have answered by through one simple word, which is panchakosh, I believe it was covered in a previous segment as well. Panchakosh, who are you? These are the five dimensions of our being, the five koshas of our being. Mm-hmm. And there, the first three koshas are actually the most important for us, which is the Annamaya kosh, mm-hmm. which is the body, the Pranamaya kosh, which is our vital energy, and the Manomaya kosh, which is our mind and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other two, Vijnanamaya kosh, which is our inner wisdom, and Anandamaya kosh, our ultimate nature of bliss, they are always there. If you see a child is, the default of a child is to have the smile that you do right now on your face.
I'm just loving the wisdom that we are sharing with everybody. But go on.
Yeah, and you know, if we can be in this kind of a joyful state at all times, automatically the alignment will happen. The problem happens at the Manomaya kosh level where the mind comes in. It's our greatest friend, it's also our greatest enemy. And that's when we lose connection to ourself, to our inner wisdom, to our true nature of joy.
Right.
So the sciences have also outlined that, okay, if you want to be established in yourself, you need to then come into your three koshas, which is what I summarized in today's language as body, energy, mind, and emotions. Be me. Those are the what you work with. And there, finally, the word yoga, which we were talking about, right? Harmony within. That again is the path to do that. We can have 10,000 different tools that we can use for our well-being, but if we're not doing it with the spirit of yoga, which is a spirit of harmony with ourselves, it's not going to be sustainable. That's why diets fail, because people are coming in with a certain level of, sometimes it's shame, sometimes it's anger at themselves, it's a lot of different factors, and that makes it non-sustainable. Even our approach to health sometimes has many, many emotions behind it. So if we approach it from a place of peace, love and joy, from a space of harmony, it will automatically become sustainable.
It reminds me of this word yukta, which we see in Bhagavad Gita a lot, which is which doesn't have an English a good English translation, but it almost sounds to me as it's typically translated as practicing yoga, but I think it's more like being in yoga, you know, the course that you guys run. And we can definitely share more details with our listeners and show notes. But I think that's what you're saying, right? That yukta is like it's a way of being healthy, actually.
Beautiful. Absolutely. The other word from the Bhagavad Gita I'm reminded of is thitta prajna, which has the same stha root that we saw comes in swast, mm-hmm. which is to be established in your pragya and your inner wisdom. So yeah,
beautiful.
Being in yoga, absolutely, not just doing yoga, but being in that state of yoga.
Absolutely. So how do you translate all these principles into action, and what are the practical tools that you use with your community, with your patients?
Right. So I'll take the analogy of a mountain. If we want to scale a mountain, there are many, many different paths to it. There is not one path. So if we want to reach a state of well-being, there is not one path alone. And that's the beauty of yoga, that it's been like a very open science. It has allowed many, many, many things to come in. You can broadly characterize them and bucket them into bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, karma yoga, the four yogas. But we can also look at it in terms of simple tools. You can take any tool to get what we want. Mm-hmm. And that's what we try to do. We try to give people a range of tools that they can choose from. Because after a point, the path doesn't matter. It's the direction in which you're headed. Mm-hmm. That's what matters. And people pick a tool of their choice based on two things. One is I want, and the second is I can. So you should be drawn towards that path, and you should have some conviction that you can do that. So the tools that we've created, or we've not created, yogis had created, we've just sort of structured it. Five kinds of broad paths. The first is Vyaya. And then let me just say all the names once and then I'll explain. There's Vyaya, Ahar, then there is Vigyan, Vichar, and Vihar. So five. So Vyayam refers to yoga as we know it today, which is, we call it exercising, but it's essentially working with the body.
The idea in the yoga world, sorry to interrupt, is called asana. Yeah, that's what we typically use.
asana and just remembering that there's just other aspects as well. So in vyayam we include the pranayam as well, the relaxing part as well. We include all of that. So everything that is stimulating and relaxing is coming into vyayam. Mm-hmm. The second tool is the ahar, which is what you're eating. And there again, the basic shift is to move from a fear-based approach that we were talking of to dieting, or a nutrient-based approach to reduce everything to carbohydrates, proteins, and calories, to move away from that to saying, how can I nourish myself through what I'm eating, when I'm eating, the emotion with which I'm eating, all of that. So that's the ahar tool that people can do, choose for transformation. Vichar is around working with the mind. So the current approach is that we often get tangled in our thoughts and emotions, and we judge ourselves. Why am I feeling guilty? Why did I, you know, lash out in a certain way? So we're essentially caught up in that loop. And to say again, instead of rejecting it, instead of suppressing it, denying it, can I be in harmony with that as well? Mm. Can I actually understand if I was given thoughts and emotions, if it's part of my design, maybe I just don't have the user manual. Maybe I just need to learn how do I harness the energy of my thoughts, of my emotions, and to then do something out of that, something constructive. And the example that for me, I think in Vichar specifically, I'll say, is that of Mahatma Gandhi, where that one incident that happened with him in South Africa, right? He would have felt anger, shame, and God knows what all in that moment. Mm-hmm. And it was actually about how he constructively channelized that to create and to give us the India that we have today.
Mm.
So Vichar is the third tool that we use. The fourth tool is Vigyan, which is understanding the core philosophy of life. Because we can live life at multiple levels. You can just live it at a superficial level. And you can also live it at a level where you are grounded in the philosophy of yoga. Principles like Satya, Ahimsa, what does it mean to practice those? Because that actually in some ways gives a different kind of grounding. It is about taking yoga off the mat and giving us, like a tree, when there is a storm, the tree will move and waver, but it's the roots that hold it steady. And these principles, this philosophy is what can hold us through the toughest of times.
Absolutely. Yoga's Guru Karman. Yeah, reminds me of that.
Exactly. So what helps you get yoga's stha? That will come from the Vigyan, which is the Vigyanmay Kosh in the Panchakosh framework as well.
Yeah.
Finally, the fifth tool, which I have discovered very recently. I always knew that tool existed, but for me, it's just been a huge sense of joy, is Vihar. So Vihar is all about leisure and about living life fully, living life freely, being tuned into what gives us joy. I recognize somewhere down the line, you know, all of these tools, they were becoming very serious. I would always keep saying, I need to do my inner work and I need to process this emotion. So, you know, I was not operating with yoga in that sense. And I think just bringing in that sort of a lightness, you know, what does it mean to have play in your life, to have joy? What does it mean to connect with nature, which is really the source of life and where all the design principles. You can learn everything about life just by looking at one tree or one animal or one child also.
Exactly. So, I think that for a lot of us, Vihar does automatically come into our lives when we have our kids. And it's amazing to see the world through their eyes, because you almost are relearning how it is to move through the world with that certain lightness that you're talking about.
So true. Which is why, despite the challenges of what parenthood brings, you know, year after year, you have people signing up for that because of the joy that it brings.
Yes. I think joy and love. Yes.
So those are the tools, the five tools that one can sort of choose from, design their own journey. Again, just I want to highlight that sometimes we do get lost in the tool. Mm-hmm. So again, it is possible to make it all about, okay, get obsessed about eating, to get obsessed about the vyayam. And this is where, again, that reminder of not to apply the reductionist approach, because then we'll go down the same path as allopathy, right? That which is taking a specialized approach, which has its own benefits in another context, not in this context where we want to heal ourselves. So every single tool, how can you bring in your body, your energy, your mind and emotions into harmony when you're applying and using that tool? So if you're eating, for example, how do you tune in and listen to the signals of your body? How do you create your menu and design what you're eating in a way that you're finding joyful replacements? It's not just a chore, right? What are your triggers for eating? When do you overeat? Can you be more mindful? All of that. It's not just about the food. It's about you.
No, this is the smile of recognition, because I'm also guilty of telling my kids, oh, we need more protein in this diet for you. You're only doing carbs because my daughter loves mac and cheese. Things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it, we can't blame it. I mean, it is something that's just, it is the prevailing mindset today that we are brought up in, we're educated in. And for me, I think the integration part, for the longest time, I think once I understood the depth of yoga, there was a time when I was rejecting everything that has happened in modern times. And it took me a while to understand, can we be in harmony with that also? Because it has had its benefits.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
But it's not the only thing. So to harmonize the West and the East, the reductionist approach and the holistic approach, you need both of them.
Great. So these tools sound excellent, and it seems like a really holistic framework, pardon my terminology, that you have here. So would love to take some real life examples, you know, and if you can share some examples of how these tools have worked for some folks in your community, and what shifted internally for them, and how did it manifest in their outer health?
Sure. Very briefly, maybe I'll touch upon the patient zero. That was me myself. I've already shared my journey, so I won't go into the details. But for me, what this has done is, I shared about the reversal of the PCOD, early signs, the weight loss, the mental health, getting clarity on my purpose for life, my back pain. And another thing that actually was completely unexpected was my skin condition. I had a genetic skin condition that I just thought, you know, that this is it. I can't do anything about it. That's just been reversed over time, and people are shocked as to how this happened. I am shocked, but I know it's the body, it's doing its work. So I myself have been patient zero for many health issues.
Lovely.
The next one, I'm just talking about more from, you know, a close circle to how I've seen this also widen out. The second journey I want to talk about is actually with my father. Mm-hmm. So my father was detected with health issues, and several of them, around 10 years ago when he moved to Bombay. We were just doing our routine checkups, and it turned out he had very, very high levels of sugar, high levels of blood pressure. And this, we had just not expected that at all. And he was put in a high dosage of medicines, which again had to be done in that moment to take care of the symptoms. So I was doing this work, and I wanted him to sort of, you know, follow with the approach that I was suggesting. But, you know, obviously a family, it's the toughest convincing. So I realized that let me just step back, and instead of trying to impose my will and the path that has worked for me, can he find a path for himself? I think that for me was my learning in the process. He actually ended up finding a path that I was just completely unaware of, which was this laughter yoga. Mm-hmm. He found a laughter yoga circle in his community, and that became his anchor for like 5-7 years. And I've seen him do it through COVID times at home. He still practices laughter yoga even if he's alone, all by himself.
Amazing. That's amazing. I grew up watching that in the parks of West Delhi, like when we went for a morning yoga or walk.
And now when I look back with more objectivity, I can understand why he picked that tool, because the root cause of his diabetes, of his hypertension manifesting, was one, his lifestyle, but also it was stress that he was carrying after my mother's demise, that loneliness that he was carrying. That's what led to that missing sweetness in his life, which then became diabetes, that search for sweetness, essentially. And laughter yoga gave him that community, gave him that joy. And that became an anchor for him. Once he had this positive energy generated within him, then he automatically started adding Vyayam, which is the yoga, meditation. he was building on successes. He then went into Ahar and said, which was my tool of preference because I knew that's the shortest path. Mm-hmm. But he had to find his own journey. And today he's at a place where he is off his medications. He only for his BP, the single basic, the least dosage. And that's also just to avoid any risk. He's on that. So no sugar, no signs of depression. He's actually supporting many people to make the plunge. And I must admit, his immunity, his well-being is the highest that I have seen around, much more than me.
That's awesome.
He manages his whole house. He manages his work. He manages, you know, all his relatives. And yeah.
Incredible. That's incredible. Great. So happy to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that gives us that confidence also. I think for me, seeing these examples very, very closely gave me the confidence to be able to say, how can I manifest this work in the world outside? So I'll talk about maybe another participant of ours who was also a staff member. And she came in with health issues at the first sight. You know, I just thought this is impossible. We need to escalate. We are not specialists. You know, we are not therapists. We are life coaches. So every level of training that we had seemed inadequate for the health issues she had.
Mm-hmm.
She was 27 years old, part of our staff team also. Very high levels of sugar, blood sugar in her bloodstream. So 10 plus was her HbA1c. She was overweight, had skin eruptions. She had endometriosis, which is an advanced stage with the menstrual, with where her ovaries, the doctor had actually said that this could now become cancer and the only way out is to operate.
Mm.
And she had a condition of syncope that she would just out of nowhere, something in the most unexpected place, she could just drop and fall like this. So just faint and just fall without any absolutely knowledge of the trigger whatsoever.
Wow, that's tough.
That was absolutely, and it was scary at first, but for us, I guess it was just also an opportunity to see how can we use the principles and work on this one by one.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with Vyayam, starting with Ahar, slowly, you know, working on the diabetes part of things, things started clearing out for her, the weight, all of that. As she worked on some of these tools that are more gross, more in our hands, what you're doing with your body, what you're putting inside your body, slowly it started opening up a space where actually she could tap into what it is that was happening inside her, what was causing this syncope to happen.
Mm.
Because the syncope, if you think about it, is actually, it's a stress response. So if you're getting chased by a lion in the jungle, you might run away, you might fight it. And if all else fails, then you just, have you seen like in the final stages, the animal just falls.
Mm.
And the syncope for her was that. And slowly the layers started unpeeling as to what was unresolved within her. What was some past trauma that had to be resolved.
Mm.
And the whole journey, it started with her physical well-being, but what it led to was her transforming her relationships, the work she is doing, and health was a side product, was a side benefit of that. Today, she heads a network of 16 clinics across the city of Bombay, and she's taking you to communities because she has that connection. Mm-hmm. She has big change.
Wow, that is incredible indeed. It's great to hear these examples because I feel like it's one thing to just know about the that such practices can have this impact, but it's another kind of aha when you hear about these real world examples. So thank you so much for sharing these with us and our listeners. Okay, so let's go back to your tools, Kitty. And I feel like out of all those tools that you mentioned, Vichar seems to be the toughest one to handle, right? Most of us are constantly swayed by our mind, and which is shaped by what we see and experience. So how do we break this pattern of thoughts that some people might have developed over years, if not decades?
Yeah, you've picked the toughest one and the most important one. So hats off to you for picking that. Because we talked about this, I think, maybe very briefly, that in yoga also, the reason why the mind is important, because it is the root cause of health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And this concept has been called Adhijya Vyadhi. So Vyadhi is a physical ailment, mm-hmm. and an Adi is a mental pattern. Mm. And Adi, ja meaning Janam. So Adi gives birth to a physical health issues, which is psychosomatic ailments. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That the right. word psychosomatic existed in our dictionary 5,000 years ago, just in another form.
That's excellent. And I feel like, and you can probably talk more about it, a bunch of what we see today, I mean, these are psychosomatic diseases, as you are already sharing with us.
Absolutely. We talked of the 70% of the health issues, which are non-communicable diseases. Mm-hmm. Those are psychosomatic in nature. Got Interestingly, it. Even infections, we think of a virus causing an infection, right? And we are trying to build our immunity. But even infections and our immunity, rather, is dependent on the state of the mind. So there's now a branch of science which is called, it's a complicated word, but let me attempt. It's called psychoendoneuroimmunology. Psycho means the mind, endo means the hormones, neuro is the nervous system, and immunology is your immunity. So this is the pathway. Finally, it is your mind that is also going to impact your immune system and therefore your ability to face any dis-ease. So that's why the mind, I'm just reiterating that it's a very, very important one. It's also very tough. And the reason for it to be tough is that in the Panchakosh model, mm-hmm. as you're moving from the body, the vital energy, things are becoming subtle. Mm-hmm. You can manipulate your body. We have more control over our body. Right? If I say open your arms, close your arms, you'll be able to do that. To manage our mind, we all know, is far, far tougher.
Very tough. Yes.
That's what Krishna also said, right? When Arjun said to Krishna, the mind is so chanchal, it's so subtle, it's just all over the place. And this is where I think what we largely try to do most of the time is to work on the mind through the mind. In my experience, that is beneficial, but it's a very, very challenging approach if that's your only approach.
Mm, interesting.
Because the mind is a monkey mind, right? It's going to go all over the place. Mm-hmm. And do you ever ask a monkey to discipline itself?
Very interesting. Yeah. Fair enough.
So yes, we can get to that when there is a certain level of stability. It's here that recognizing that we are integrated beings. We are our panchakosh. Our self is our body, energy, mind, emotions. Bringing in some of the other tools becomes very, very helpful. And this is what we have found very helpful in working with mental health issues as well, in working with bipolar disorder, depression. In fact, one of the very first things we say is to not try and meditate right now because the mind may not be ready for it. Mm. A lot may come up that the mind may not be able to process. We first get people to do vyayam to engage with their body. Because when you're engaging with the body, it's actually like a meditation, but you're just moving and you're focusing on something that is more subtle, that's more gross. Mm-hmm. So the vyayam actually helps to slow down the mind and to let your body govern the pace of your mind and not the other way around, which is what happens with vichar. Mm. That's where vyayam becomes important. Ahar is very important. What you're putting into your body is going to become a part of you. It is going to create your thoughts. And now there is research around that. They've done experiments and found that in prisons, for example, when they compared inmates who were on a plant-based diet with those who were on the regular diet, and they found that there was a difference in the level of violence.
Wow.
They found this with children also, that in schools, violence is lower when you're on a plant-based food because what you're putting in is going to create your thoughts. So these are some of the tools that are very, very in your hands. When I talked of Vihar, for example, tuning into nature, taking the time out to do something as simple as just walking barefoot on the grass. It's now proven and it's shown that how that reduces the inflammation in the body. It also brings us to the present moment. When you're walking on the grass, you're going to feel the grass, right? You're going to feel the breeze. It's bringing us into the present. So these are easy ways of meditating without meditating.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's meditation in motion. Yeah.
It's meditation in motion. Exactly. So that would be my first. I think that's at least the approach that we follow first, to bring in some of the other tools because they become very supportive. They create a positive momentum that someone then feels, I want and I can do something about it. Mm-hmm. And then we can start with the next layer of looking at the mind and engaging with the mind. And in the mind, finally, it is about recognizing that right now what we're doing is we're operating from our primal instincts, which is the fight, flight, fear. We have been, you know, evolved. Our evolution is based on our time in the jungles. Mm-hmm. Earlier, there were physical threats, and that's why these responses came. Today, we don't have physical threats, but anything small. And if someone criticizes me at work, or I have an argument or something at home, essentially it triggers the same response within us. Mm-hmm. And our physical survival is no longer at stake, but we have made our opinions as an extension of us. So if someone threatens my opinion, it means you're threatening my survival. So we have become more fragile in that sense.
Very interesting. So then for so to access this, transform this, is it still meditation that you use as a tool once you have created a base to work with?
I would say all of these come together. I will share what we do with Vichar when people do feel ready for it. Again, it's very, very simple tools. So the power lies in their implementation. They may seem very simple. The three tools that we use, and I've been using these words, I think, a couple of times, are peace, love, and joy. Mm. So instead of trying to weed out the depression, the anger, the hopelessness, can you cultivate the channel for peace, love, and joy? Because that is our essential nature. That is our Anand Nikosh. Mm-hmm. We prescribe, we literally, like a doctor, we say this is our prescription. Three things for you. For peace, we basically suggest that you can meditate or you can do some sort of a relaxation during the day to find that peace. For love, we recommend Bhakti Yoga. So tuning into any power, it may be a higher power, it may be a living person, it may be anyone whom you actually have some faith towards. It can be nature, it can be a value. Like for me, Satya is what I have my bhakti towards. So the object doesn't matter. The important thing is to cultivate faith, cultivate love. And this is pure love without the transactions and the expectations, right? And the third prescription that we give for joy, we call it 5 minutes of joy. So we say, you do everything in your life for other people, but just take out 5 minutes of joy to do something you're doing for yourself. Mm. This then creates a positive momentum for people. And it finally, what it leads to, once we have this kind of a situation, is when we can start then tuning into the unpleasant emotions and say, okay, if anger is coming, what's the reason behind that? Can I not judge it? Because the moment I judge it, I create another emotion. I either create guilt, I create anger, more anger at myself. So can we see all of them from a place of yoga, harmony, and understand the reason why these emotions are coming, then do something about it?
Wow. It does sound very simple, but you're right. Just it's a ripple effect, right? You start with something as small as that, and it has a ripple effect to the rest of your day. Interesting you mentioned Bhakti Yoga, because just last evening I was in a class about Bhakti Yoga, and the discussion about what does love mean and what is today's view of this word. And originally that's not, I mean, it's mostly become about relationship and the, and all the dynamics of a relationship. But true love comes from within and doesn't have to be dependent on somebody else.
Yeah. And Bhakti Yoga is actually one of the single most important tools today, because our mind has become hyper-developed, hyper-active, mm-hmm. but our hearts really haven't opened up. We are more intellectual beings. If we see, our grandparents were different creatures, and the fact is our grandparents were healthier than us. I think you all know that. So there is something they were doing right that we can learn from, and that Bhakti was a big part. They lived their lives from that place of fear, from that place of faith, from that place of trust.
Absolutely. No, that is true. It's funny you mentioned that, because I did give an example of my grandmom, and growing up, you saw grandmoms getting together, doing kirtan, and the joy on their faces. And I just could not understand it at all. And now looking back, It yeah, it all comes together. So wow, any last words? This has been a very enlightening episode for all of us, and definitely for me as well. So anything you'd like to, I don't know, advise our listeners? Or
I'll just close with our motto, which is, you know, to be free to be me, and to do that with peace, love and joy. So all the answers are within us. We have all the tools. We just need to take one step, and the rest will happen.
That's beautiful, Garima. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all your deep insights and your experiences. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing. And we hope to speak with you again. Thank you.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. I love this. Thank you.